Blog Talk Radio.
Show that we have on Suspense Radio today. The first one we had was H.T. Narr and Dale Brown. I am your host, John Robb, and we got Steve Barry coming up for you in about a minute talking about Jefferson Key, his seventh book in the Cotton Malone series, and the first to domestic thriller to be set all right here in the United States. So we're going to get right on it here in about 30 seconds because Suspense Radio second part starts now. You back here on a Saturday evening, 3 o'clock Pacific time, 6 o'clock Eastern time, to join us to talk with Steve Barry, New York Times bestselling author of the Cotton Malone series with his latest book, The Jefferson Key. Steve has had a very busy day with his History Matters, which is a nonprofit organization, which you can find a lot more information at by going to his website, steveberry.org, to check that out because it's a great organization. So, Steve, thank you so much for joining us, and how are you doing so far today?
It's great. I'm a little tired. I started at 8 o'clock this morning, finished up about 4, so it's a good day, though. We had about 35 students. We taught. We raised a few $1,000 for the Raleigh Cemetery Association. It was really good.
Yeah, and then you're, like we talked a little bit, now you're off on the road to hit the Jefferson Key, doing a lot of information, a lot of events going from the West Coast to the Midwest and back to the East Coast. So you got a busy time ahead of you, rounding up here at Thriller Fest in July.
Yep, we do. We're headed out of here to Houston, then we're going to go out to Portland, do some events there, then over to Phoenix, over to Chicago, then back home to do some events in Georgia and Florida. And then you're right, we'll all be at Thriller Fest, the summer camp for thriller writers. We'll all be there in July.
Well, you know, the events that you have set up are great in the United States because that's where the whole Jefferson Key book, Finally Caught Malone, is back over in the U.S. His entire book is set right now in the United States. Book number 7 of the Malone series. What prompted here now to be, this is the time when Cotton is going to be totally in the United States talking about, you know, the Constitution, assassinated presidents, the whole thing. What prompted this one?
Well, I've been wanting to do a domestic thriller. I knew Cotton was going to come home at some point in time. When I created Cotton in the Templar Legacy, I always envisioned him coming home to do a domestic adventure. It just didn't work out well. We sent him all over Europe, all over Central Asia, out to China. And then finally, when I was thinking about what to write for this year, it occurred to me, well, why not bring him home? It's time to come home. And Random House agreed. So he's come home, and he's got himself into a big mess. He's dealing with some really cool stuff, though. I mean, like you said, we've got a clause in the United States Constitution that I dare say 99.9% of America would be shocked to know was in there, and that's been fascinating me since law school. So I was able to fashion this thriller around that clause, and weave in some pirates and presidential assassinations and some great American history that takes the reader all up and down the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah, and it has all the great characters, and because, you know, Cassiopeia Vitz in there, Jonathan Wyatt's in there, and Stephanie, poor Stephanie, gets herself very early on in some very predicament that you have to check out. But, you know, you started the book off, you know, right with a bang. Not going to give anything away. I'm just going to tell people that it starts off literally with a bang, Cotton thrown right here into the situation. And, yeah, it kind of goes all the way back. You know, you're going back to the Andrew Jackson, but then back to Thomas Jefferson, and you're kind of bringing a lot of American history, you know, into the forefront, which is great because a lot of people probably have no idea about the four assassinated presidents, really besides Kennedy because he was the biggest name. But you bring in the other three, and you kind of have to tie all this together with the, you know, with the thing in the Constitution. How was that in order to, you know, go back and research all of that information with Andrew Jackson and coming up going forward?
There was a lot of cool stuff that I came across that I never realized till I got in there and started doing the research. And as I began to link these four assassinations up, it was pretty neat. There's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of interesting things. And then as I began to really put it together, I was able to take that clause of the Constitution and link them up through that clause. And so that is a little bit of the fiction of the book, but the fiction is based on some really interesting fact, which is fascinating to me. An example, Andrew Jackson was the first president that whose life was threatened. Two guns were pointed at him. Both were fired. Both misfired. It's incredible that happened, but it did. Both misfires. Jackson, being Jackson, took his cane and began to beat the guy. He beat him and attacked his own attacker. You know, that's where he was. But here's the cool thing. Jackson was threatened by a lot of people. And one of the threats came in writing, in a letter. And a letter was from a guy who was mad because Jackson refused to pardon two pirates who had been convicted of piracy. And he threatened to come kill the president if he didn't pardon them. The letter was written by a man named Julius Booth. Julius Booth was the father of John Wilkes Booth. And,
oh.
I mean, you come across that in your research and you go, like, this is amazing. I mean, well, that's incredible that actually happened. So I had to incorporate all that in. There's a lot of things I came across like that I incorporate in. The reader's going to learn about this clause in the Constitution. He's going to learn about these presidential assassinations. They're going to learn about a code from Thomas Jefferson that's real, that was not broken until about 2 years ago. And I actually used the code, and I coded my own message with the code and put it in there, and you'll see how the code is broken. It's a very interesting code, the way it's put together. So it's just a good romp through American history with also a good suspenseful story along the way, because Cotton and Cassiopeia get really pulled into this and drawn into a real fight that's going on.
Yeah, you know, when I was sitting there reading the book and I looked, and like, I believe like in the first 50 pages, you do see the Jefferson Code, and you look at it, and to the naked eye, like someone like me, it literally looks like somebody that, you know, is just drunk typing, to tell you the truth. You have no idea what you're typing. There's just letters coming out. But then to kind of see all those things unravel, and then we were able to go to Tennessee and visit the home of Andrew Jackson and hear his story, where he really was like the big rogue president that was, like you mentioned in the book, the first one to literally be elected and go out by the people instead of really by kind of big industry thing. And that was not known. And so he was like the rogue president.
Yeah, he changed the face of American politics because he got elected in the way that we now consider standard. He went out, he campaigned to the people, and he was elected by the popular vote of the people, where prior to that time, it was the few who got together, and presidents really catered to the few, and the few catered to the Electoral College, and the Electoral College elected the president. With Andrew Jackson, it all changed, and American politics changed forever after that. And all of this, you know, we deal with in the book as well, and it just was just amazing to me, the interesting, because I've spent, you know, six books with Europe and Asia, and I've been learning all those cool things about those places over there, little known things I didn't know. But there was a lot about American history I had not realized either. So I really enjoyed, you know, writing this book.
Yeah, you know, we have about 240 years, I guess, of American history since we've been independent from the British, and there's been a lot of different stories, like, you know, from your book to National Treasure to a lot of different ones about the founding fathers and what they've done, kind of packed into those 240 years that a lot of Americans really don't realize. And I think it's great that, you know, you're able to find those things like you did and bring a book like the Jefferson Key, and hopefully in the future you're going to have Cotton maybe unravel something else right here domestically. Is that in the future?
Yeah. He'll be back. I think he's going to come back. I mean, this book really allowed me to explore some things, and I want to go back and do some more because I came across some things in the research that really fascinated me that I filed away for the future. But we're dealing with a clause in the United States Constitution in this book, a clause that's been there since the beginning, a clause in Article 1, Section 8, that basically gives Congress the power to hire pirates. They can create letters of marque. Letters of marque are nothing more than a grant from the Congress to a pirate to go out and steal on behalf of the United States government. That's been in our Constitution since the beginning. And I dare say Americans would be very shocked to know that we have that kind of power, but we do. And it always fascinated me, and it was just really great that I was able to put this together and make this thriller out of it for Cotton Malone, but at the same time educate, you know, folks about what's in our Constitution. There's a lot of cool things in there. It's a great document, and it has some very interesting things in it that, as I said, would surprise a lot of people.
And do you think that when people are talking about, I guess, the Masons are a big part of, you know, American history with different people have written about that, and then, of course, you know, the Templar treasure and where is that hidden, do you think that there are certain coded kinds of things that are listed in the Constitution and other parts of our government documents that kind of can be unraveled like you did here in the Jefferson Key with Cotton?
I'm not sure there's any coded things. That would be a fanciful thing to be neat. The great thing about this book and the cool thing about it is this really isn't a coded thing. This is actually sitting in there. Article 1, Section 8, there it is. Congress has the power to grant letters of marque, and they have, you know, they've had this power to do so. It's not really a secret. It's just sitting there. It's just a power that's been dormant for a long time, and I just think that's amazing. With that kind of power to hire pirates to do, you know, go out and do our bidding for us, we can actually do that. Now, in the early part of the Republic, we used that a lot. Privateers won the American Revolution for us. I mean, privateers are nothing more than pirates who hold letters of marque. They actually hold it and they go out and do it, and that's what they did. They went over and they wreaked havoc on British shipping and brought the English economy to its knees, and that's how the American Revolution ended. And so this is really sitting right there. It's real. It's in the Constitution. It's just a power that I think Americans would say, like, wow, we really have that in there? Yep, sitting right there.
And it is. It's one of those things that when you go back to 1776 and everything was being drawn up and the Continental Congress in 81 and 85 and things of those natures, people just don't realize, I think, with the way things have moved on that, you know, those documents and those things existed back there. And, hey, and they are. They're still there. You see all the time when you go to, like, the Yahoos and you search, those old state constitutions as far as, you know, not washing your cow in your bathtub, those things are still there in those constitutions. They just never taken them out.
Yeah, there's a lot of these old
type things.
This particular power, though, was put there on purpose and was set up on purpose and put there for a specific purpose. It may have outlived its purpose, but it's still there. Now, after 9/11, there was some talk of using this clause in the Constitution. There actually was, but it never gained much traction.
So, kind of going back, and you know, I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with Steve Barry. SteveBarry.org is his website. We're talking about the Jefferson Key that just came out Tuesday, May the 17th, and you know, Steve is going strong, doing book tour and everything else. But the one thing that you also did was you did a couple ebook originals. And you did the Balkan Escape, and you did the Devil's Gold. One was a Cassiopeia adventure. The other one was a Jonathan Wyatt adventure. And, you know, they were shorter, and you know, but they were kind of linked everything. You know, they kind of linked things together. Do you have plans to do that again in the future with some of those characters?
Yeah, I was seeing us doing that. In fact, it's catching on now. We were the very first people to do this. We did it last year with the Balkan Escape. Joe Fender's getting ready to do it. Jim Rollins is getting ready to do it. David Baldacci has just done it. So it's kind of caught on now, and it's a way to draw in new readers is what it is. It's a way to get new readers who would not put $26 down to buy a book but would put 99 cents down, and they would explore and see if they like us, and if they do, then they would go and pick up the books. It worked with the Balkan Escape. We drew in new readers with it, and hopefully it's working with the Devil's Gold. They're short. 5,000 words for one, 16,000 words for the other, way too short to print and put into a separate publication. So the e-format offers a perfect way to throw that out there, and I would see us doing it. Yes, no question, we're going to be doing it for the next couple of books. It's Random House came up with this idea, and it worked, and obviously it's worked so well that others are now copying it.
Yeah, and it's kind of a bridge going into, well, not really a bridge going into the next story, but it kind of, you know, you can kind of fill some holes, and it kind of does a little bit of fun. You know, you have fun with it, and I think that's the most important part, that people are able to see exactly, you know, what's going on with certain characters and how these things are evolving all together.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it is you write the story in such a way that if you read it first, it whets your appetite for the book. If you read it after you read the book, it fills in a gap. And you never, but if you don't read it at all, it doesn't hurt anything. So you have to write the story in that manner so the reader doesn't feel like they have to go read it. It's really designed to bring in new readers. Now, my existing readers read it because they want to fill in that gap and find out that little missing piece that's in there. But the new readers read it and say, hey, this is pretty cool. I like this. This is a kind of good kind of story. Let me see if I can get some more of this. Let me click on the book now and check it out. And so it's a good marketing tool, and it's a way of using the e-format in a new and clever way.
Now, we kind of talked a little off-air, and I know that back in October you did something very cool. We had David Morrell on. He had discussed it. James Rollins was with you along with Andy Harp, yourself. You guys went out on a UFO tour over to visit the troops in Iraq, and, you know, like I said, we were mentioning a little off-air, but how was that experience for you when you were able to bring, you know, yourself over there and see what they do, and how well that they kind of embraced, you know, your writing and what you guys were able to do for them while they're over there, you know, fighting for us?
It was quite amazing. It was 9 incredible days. We went from dawn to midnight every day. We saw a lot of people. We went to where they worked. We interact with them all day. They came to us in the evenings to the rec centers and the dining halls. We talked to thousands of people. We went constantly. Reading is the number one recreational activity over there. Reading is very important. What we heard over and over was, hey, we get sports personalities, we get celebrities, we get cheerleaders, we get everybody, but we never had writers. This is really great. Mm-hmm. We love writers. We love to talk to you about it. We want to talk more with you about it. And that's what we did. We talked writing and reading, and not just with enlisted personnel. We had generals and colonels and captains. We had everybody coming out and sitting down with us. It was quite an experience. And Bethesda Hospital and Walter Reed was just very moving, an amazing place. Not a negative word among any of those injured soldiers. Everybody was a professional. Everybody was doing their job. Everybody was interested in getting the job done. The tour was so successful that and we were kind of the guinea pigs to see if it would even work, that they're now going to do Operation Thriller 2 later this year. So another group of thriller writers will be headed over there later this year to do it again.
And see, and I think that that's wonderful to be able to extend, you know, what you do, and you bring so much joy to be able to go out there to what they do, because they keep us having joy, and to kind of put those two things together and make a great match. I think that it's wonderful.
That's great.
And that's just, yeah, and that's just one of the things you do, because like you mentioned, you know, you have your, you do a lot of things. First of all, you know, you have History Matters, you have Thriller Fest that goes on, so you do a lot more outside of becoming an author. And so with History Matters, I don't know if a lot of people know exactly what you do with that or what it is, but can you kind of tell them, and you know, how they can find out more information and maybe help on what exactly you're doing with that?
Yeah, like today, we did a History Matters event here in Raleigh. Today is where we are. And what we do is the community contacts us and says, we have a project. This was the Raleigh Cemetery Association. They have a historic cemetery here that's in need of some serious work. They contacted us, and then we set up a writer's workshop here. And the writer's workshop is for the writers of the area to come, and me and Elizabeth teach for 5 hours. We taught 5 hours today of an intense course on the craft of writing. And you bought your way in with a contribution. It was $115 here is what you paid to come. You got 5 hours and a lunch, and every dime of that goes to the Raleigh Cemetery Association. I don't charge to come. I don't charge any expenses or anything like that. And it's a way to raise money for historic preservation from a group of people, writers, who might not otherwise contribute to that, but they would contribute to their craft. And we've done, this was number 9. We have taught around 640 students now, and we've raised around $65,000 for various historic projects, and we have 2 more scheduled for this year, actually 3 more for this year, and we're looking for stuff now for 2012 and 13. So if anybody out there has a History Matters project, a project in your area that might need some money to help, and we can get a group of writers, and we've got writers in that area, and there's writers everywhere. Go to my website, steveberry.org, click on History Matters, send us an email, and we will see if we can come out and help you out.
Yeah, and, you know, with all the stuff that just happened in the South with the thunderstorms and all the tornadoes that are going to happen, I mean, you're going to see a lot of that old American history. Unfortunately, you know, some of that stuff gets destroyed and needs rebuilt, and there's no money in the state budgets anymore to do anything like that.
No, there isn't. That's what happened here. A tornado ripped through this historic cemetery and destroyed it. And so that's one of the things they need. They've got to have some money to clean it up. And you'd be surprised what $5,000 would do. We raised $5,000 at a vid out in Pleasanton, California last year. And I thought, well, you know, that's not a lot of money. But then someone that told me, said, wait a minute, you don't understand what that money's going to do. We have a hole in the roof of our historic museum building that's from the 19th century, and this $5,000 is going to plug that hole to keep that building from falling apart. So the $5,000 can save a building. And so that's what I'm saying. History Matters can raise you, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. We can do that. And it goes a long way. So, you know, if anybody's got some projects out there, get in touch with us, and let's see if we can put together a workshop in your area, and we'll come out and do it.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing you have coming, and we've talked about this too, is Thriller Fest is coming up in July, and like we've always said, if you want to invest in your reading or invest in your writing and you're an author and you want to get yourself that jump forward, something that you didn't have and David didn't have and, you know, Gail Linz didn't have, is Thriller Fest in New York. And do you have, you know, what kind of surprises or anything do you have coming up, you know, this year in Thriller Fest?
There's some cool stuff coming this year. I mean, like, for example, Ken Follett came last year. He was our Thriller Master. He came to Craft Fest and sat in a session or two. He loved it so much, he called up a few months ago and said, can I come back and teach at Craft Fest? So Ken Follett will be back at Thriller Fest, and he will be teaching at Craft Fest, which is pretty amazing to do.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, my wife, runs Thriller Fest. She's executive director of it. And she's got like 30 New York Times bestsellers teaching at Craft Fest. We have 60 agents this year at Agent Fest. That's the most we've ever had, 60 agents in one place. So if anybody out there has got a manuscript, they're trying to sell it, they need agent representation, that's the place to be. You're going to get speed dating. You get 3 minutes with some of those agents to pitch your book. And you've got 60 of the biggest ones in the business there. It's incredible. And then our Thriller Master this year is R.L. Stine, who probably did more for getting people to read and more for creating thrillers than anybody I can think of, because this man has 650 million books in print. It's incredible. You know, 650 million, and that's what he's done. And every one of them are thrillers. They're little, you know, those were children's books. They were a little bit of horror to them, but they were thrillers in their own way, and they stimulated so many people. So we feel, you know, privileged to be able to honor R.L. Stine this year. So it's going to be quite a 5 days in New York. It's really going to be quite amazing. If anybody's interested in it, they can go to thrillerwriters.org and check it out and come on up and participate. We anticipate around 800 people there, about 200 writers, around 50 to 75 New York Times bestsellers.
Well, you know, anybody that always contacts and I interview, and if they don't know about it and they're a published author from, you know, one of the houses, you know, you can join the Thriller Writers Organization for free. And a lot of people don't realize that they have a place that they can go, that they can get support for. And, you know, I always push in that direction and tell them to look into exactly what you have to do to, you know, become a member.
We're very rare in that. If you're a professional, if you're a thriller writer, if you're a published thriller writer with an approved house, which is just about all the publishing houses, if you write for one of those, your membership in ITW is free. And it's and you know, any of those thriller writers out there, please join. Come on, you'll enjoy it. It's a great gathering. Literally, this is what it is. It's summer camp for thriller writers and thriller enthusiasts. Because the thriller enthusiasts come, the fans come. We'll have 500 fans there this year, and it's growing every year. So the fans are going to love it. You're going to have your best favorite people in one place where you can interact with them and talk to them. There are no barriers at Thriller Fest. Everybody is in the same place, same location, doing the same thing.
Okay, I have one question I've always wanted to ask, and I've never asked. I don't know why. but you have Cotton Malone sitting in front of you right now, and you guys are sitting across from each other. What's the one question you would want to ask him that he's going to give you the answer to?
I know a lot of people want me to ask, how did he get his name? That's the question they're going to want me to ask to do it. But he's going to answer that like he always does. Long story, my friend. One day we're going to explain that answer. We're going to explain his name and do it. But for now, it's just long story. That's sort of about the number one thing that everybody wants to ask Cotton. How'd you get that name? But there is
so
a story.
When the time is right, you're going to bring that up, whether it's going to be in the full-length book or whether you write an e-book about it and make it an e-book original and find the people find
there
out
will
that
be
way.
One day we will explain how Cotton got his name. There is a story to it. I just got to wait to the right time to put it together.
And so coming up in the future, I'm sure, and then you're always working, you're always writing, you're always like a book and a half ahead of, you know, what you're doing now, which is the, I want to remind everybody that your website is steveberry.org. You can follow him on Facebook. You can get his newsletter. You can read the first excerpt of The Jefferson Key, which is a book at now on his website. We also have it posted on our website. So there's no reason why people can't go out there and get it. And like you said, The Balkan Escape, The Devil's Gold, you know, talking 99 cents. Go out there and get familiar with the characters, which is great. So, you know, what do you have lined up for Cotton? Do you ever have, you know, is your next book going to be Cotton, or are you doing anything standalone? Kind of what's happening in the future?
Cotton called me a couple months ago, and about 3 months ago, and asked me if he could take a vacation. He's a little tired.
Oh.
I've been blowing up his bookshop and causing him a lot of problems. He'd like to kind of rest. So he's going to take 2012 off, and I'm writing a standalone, a new set of characters. It's been a lot of fun to do it. There's the same kind of thing, action, history, secrets, conspiracy, but a totally new set of characters with new motivations, new everything, and a very interesting thing from history we're going to deal with in that no one's ever really dealt with in fiction before. I came across it a couple of years ago, and we just got back from Prague and Jamaica where we did research for this book. So it's going to be a good story, be coming out a year from now. Then Cotton will return in 2013 with a story with him and Gary, his son, and it's going to be set in, over in England.
Well,
and I did the research for that when we were in London about a couple months ago.
And I'll tell you what, I don't think I've ever heard an author say the words Prague and Jamaica together that they had to research a book. So that's going to be interesting to see how you're going to work that in.
There is a connection. There is a connection between those. Yes.
Wow. Those are like two totally separate parts of I just can't imagine. I can't wait to see what you come up. But all different characters. No Cassiopeia, no Cotton, no Stephanie. Everything brand new.
Completely new set of characters with new motivations. He's an interesting guy. He's not a Cotton Malone kind of character. He's an ex-newspaper reporter who's been disgraced. And he's drawn into something quite extraordinary, something amazing that draws him in. If people like this guy, he could come back. I'm gonna write it in such a way where if you like him, he might could come back, and we'll see some more adventures from him.
Great. Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, we're gonna keep tune on what's going on. You keep us updated on what's happening with this new standalone, and we can't wait to see Cotton back now in 2013. You get some rest. You got a long trips ahead of you coming up, and we want to thank you so much for joining us today.
That's great. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on.
All right, Steve. Enjoy yourself, and we'll see you in July.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Again, everybody, that is Steve Berry, best-selling author of The Jefferson Key, the book that is out right now. Came out on Tuesday. You follow at steveberry.org. Go get the book. The first time Cotton Malone is in a domestic thriller, you will not be disappointed. Brings in great American history dating back to Thomas Jefferson, deciphering codes, the whole nine yards. If you're fans of National Treasure, if you're a fan, you know, of the Dan Brown series, you're a fan of all those things, you have got to pick up Jefferson Key and, you know, experience it for yourself, because there's some great things here that Steve explores with the Constitution. In a section, like he said, that the Congress is able to, you know, get pirates to kind of, you know, do some of their dirty work, which might not happen now, but did happen or could happen or is happening in the assassination of four presidents that we've had in history. Right now, we have something special that we're going to do for you is author Andrew Peterson, and he has a book out, and we met Andrew at the RT Festival here in Los Angeles last month, and it was a great thing that you guys, you know, should definitely check out if you're ever around Los Angeles or you know about the RT Festival that you have to go, that you have to go see. But his book is called Forced to Kill. And Andrew was nice enough to give us an excerpt from the book. And it's not just any excerpt, you know, that you're, you know, that you're talking about, but he actually gave it to us that you can listen to. And it's about 5.5 minutes long, and we're going to play that for you right now. So everybody, again, this is Andrew Peterson. This is a book that just came out, or that's going to be coming out, and it is an excerpt from it, and it's called First to Kill, and here's Andrew Peterson.
Chapter 1. The light turned green. U.S. Marine Corps Staff Sergeant Eric Ramsland leapt into a moonless night. Sub-zero air instantly whipped his jumpsuit. A slow tumble offered him a final look at the C-130J's black form. Higher than Mount Everest, he stabilized into belly flight as he reached terminal velocity, nearly a football field per second. He glanced at the backlit GPS device strapped to his wrist, but it didn't register coordinates. His forward speed hadn't bled off yet. 10,000 feet below, massive cumulus towers awaited his arrival. He'd be penetrating their ghostly forms within the next 40 seconds. They weren't fully developed, but they'd still pack plenty of punch. He took another look at the GPS. Good. Coordinates were displayed. Using the compass on the opposite wrist, he made a slight course correction to the east, then a finer adjustment due south. On the western horizon, the faint glow from Port Lamar foreshadowed the vast city of Caracas beyond. This wasn't his first halo jump, but it could be the most dangerous. His orders were to secure tonight's target alive and transport him to the extraction point. Using the target's personal vehicle remained the best option, but he wouldn't know how to play it until he assessed the situation. Ramsland considered himself a human smart bomb. Nothing more, nothing less. Questioning orders led to doubt, and this mission had no place for it. Ramsland cleaved into the clouds, and all light vanished. Eddies bent and twisted his body. He stopped monitoring the GPS and concentrated on keeping his freefall stable. A wet chill penetrated his jumpsuit and the polypropylene thermal undergarment, forcing a shiver. He hated clouds, hated the cold, being blind. Things got worse when a violent wind shear jerked him onto his side, propelling him into a vertical spin. Without a horizon as a reference, he couldn't correct the hideous sensation of cartwheeling out of control. At least there wasn't hail in here. Being blasted by hailstones, even small ones, at 300 feet per second, would definitely ruin his evening. He summoned an image of his wife to calm his mind. He took slow, deep breaths and told himself to relax. Stable air would return any second now. Then, quickly as it arrived, the turbulence ended and the lights of Tobago snapped on. With a solid horizon, he arrested the spin, stabilized into controlled freefall, and checked his coordinates and altimeter, both good. He remained on target as he tore through 12,000 feet and welcomed the slight increase in temperature. That cloud mass had been freezing. He zeroed in on a large, dark area directly below. Mount Irvine Bay Golf Course, 11,000 feet. He visualized the layout of his Mark's house, plantation style, backyard pool and spa, interior courtyard, basement below the study, 10,000. Two security cameras mounted atop a 10-foot perimeter wall, two more on the roof watching the rear yard and pool, one in the front courtyard. Two Dobermans patrolling the exterior yard, three bodyguards, two working with the dogs, one on the inside monitoring the cameras. 8,000. Coordinates still good. He stayed on pure oxygen. 6. Thicker air now. 5 seconds per thousand. Perfect terminal velocity. 4. Temperature rapidly rising. 3,000. 2. Experiencing a slight ground rush. 1,500. Now. The multi-cell ram air canopy issued a whoop and burst open at 1,100 feet. His body jerked to a relative stop compared to his previous speed. He removed his oxygen mask and goggles and let them dangle around his neck. Next, he unzipped the belly pack, powered up his night vision goggles, and secured them in place over his helmet. He pivoted the device down to his eyes and adjusted the focus. The world turned bright green, resolving into perfect clarity. It was eerily quiet now, with the roar of rushing wind gone. He began a rapid spiral descent toward his LZ. At 300 feet AGL, he lined up on the fairway and focused on the exact spot he wanted. 10 feet above the ground, he pulled hard on both toggles, executed a perfect flare, and touched down in a slight run. Incredible. From 30,000 feet to sea level in under 3 minutes.
Again, everybody, that was Andrew Peterson's book called Forced to Kill. It is an exclusive audiobook. It can be found by going to audible.com, which is a great site if you are into audiobooks, which I'm telling you, I am an audiobook junkie. I love audiobooks because just from sitting there and listening to, you know, that excerpt from the book, you can literally put yourself involved, you know, right into the story. Andrew's doing a great job. And the reader of the audiobook, you know, just puts you into a world that you just get yourself just enthralled with. And you can take it on the go with you, or you can put them on your iPod, you can put them in the car, wherever you are, you can sit there and listen to these books, and you just zone out. When you're going on road trips, you're driving a couple hours here and there, literally, you leave your house, you're there, you don't know where the time went because you're listening to great audiobooks. So audible.com is a great place to go for that, to have that happen. So I would suggest everyone to go out there. You can visit Andrew at andrewpeterson.com. You can find out about his other book, which is called First to Kill. So you have First to Kill, which is in the print form and audiobook, but then you have Forced to Kill, which you just heard an excerpt for, and that's found exclusively right now on audible.com. So I definitely want to tell everyone to go check all that out and, you know, experience Andrew for yourself, because he's a great writer and someone that should be on your bookshelf, and you can put it right here for the summer reading, take it to the beach on your iPod and listen to it. Just don't get sand in it. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an extremely busy day for us here on Suspense Radio with our first show we had this morning of H.T. Nera and Dale Brown. And then we just came back with, we just had Steve Barry on talking about the Jefferson Key. And you just heard, like I said, Forced to Kill from Andrew Peterson. So I'm your host, John Robb. It's been a great Saturday. I want to invite everybody to come back here May 26th, where we're going to have Laurel K. Hamilton on at 2 p.m. Again, you can listen to all the back ones by going to blogtalkradio.com/suspensemagazine. We have all of it up there, iTunes, Netflix, Zune, webcasting sites. You can find it, and you can put them and listen to them whenever you want to, however you want to, but just listen to them and let the authors tell you what the story's about. Don't let someone else tell you what the author thinks it's about. They're telling you. All right, we're interviewing them. We're getting down to the dirty, deep behind the scenes, so you know all the action that's coming out. Best way to do it is right here on Suspense Radio. SuspenseMagazine.com, we have a lot of great things that we're doing out there. You're going to be seeing a lot of different items coming up in Suspense Magazine. We're having Jeremy Robinson and Sandra Brannon, Boyd Morrison, Tess Gerritsen, and a lot of other first chapters of books and excerpts, because I think that that's the way that a lot of people are finding, you know, their new books and what they're going to read. You know, we have Brett Battle Sick in that, and it's doing wonderful, so you should check that out. But we're going to have a lot more different things coming up between, with Stuart Woods And like I said, Tess Garrison, Boyd Morrison, they're going to be on the show. We're going to be back on the 26th with Laurel K. Hamilton. We're also going to be back next weekend. We're going to have Sandra Brennan, and we're going to have a debut authors, C.K. Webb and D.J. Weaver. They're going to talk about their books. And, you know, we're going to be out for Thriller Fest in July. If you have a chance to come out and, you know, you want to, you know, see what's going on, we're going to be out there. We're actually going to do a show on July the 9th out there. We're going to have Jeff Abbott. So, you know, Lisa Jackson and Nancy Bush are going to come up on June the 4th. John Land is going to be on June the 25th. Chevy Stevens, June the 26th, we're going to have on there. That's going to be a very exciting week, and we're going to have both of them on. Boyd Morrison's coming on July 2nd, Jeff Abbott on July the 9th, and Catherine Coulter on July 23rd. You can find all this out by going to suspensemagazine.com, clicking on Suspense Radio. You'll see the lineup. We update it when we get new items and we get new authors, and we keep them coming to you. So definitely want to go and keep checking that out. It's been a great Saturday. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We will see you all on Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific with Laurel K. Hamilton. And, you know, until then, you guys have a great day. Enjoy the weather. Read some books, however you want to do it, audio, anyway, e-books. Just start reading. Find out some authors. Find some things. We'll see you guys all on Thursday. Have a great day. Thank you.